So let me just say that looking at what actually is happening in our country now, we were actually thinking it does actually reflect on some of the challenges we have as a continent. So when you actually look at those issues, you actually understand that we may have to look at lots of issues which speaks to Africa integration. Because the issues of what we see happening has more to do with socio-economic issues, not political at all. And in most of the things that actually are coming through, one would like Ambassador to check how we're doing in integration of the continent. Because obviously we would actually have different things we can grow and develop as countries in the continent and be able to look at how we proceed to create that social and economic environment where we are able to actually, on the best of what each one of us can do as country, be able to grow that space and have a working relationship. Because if it comes to business, you talk about potential issues where you can be blamed for collusion. But I think as a continent, we can, as different countries, do what we best at, complement, because we are not going to be best on the same thing as different countries, and look at those spaces to be able to grow them. So I think one was looking at the top five exports, when it's actually the list of platinum, gold, coal, and iron. The only different part is motor cars. So which means on that one there's a bit of value add. Although you've explained it very well, that we're getting bits of that. But on the manufacturing side, we actually have space for potential growth, which means there's actually more components that can be done here. And on that one, we are on manufacturing. So when you look at those exports as well, when we look at beneficiation we do and products that we take to other parts of the world and other countries, we can actually do better. So I think maybe on the other side is the issue of non-tariff barriers, such as quotas and standard. Those are quite important issues. So I thought it will be quite important that we actually try and get you to have a discussion on issues that will help us, you know, see what are areas of growth, and in terms of continent outside Africa, be a point of saying in terms of Africa, irrespective of where you are, how do we actually then get the other continents to actually add value on our space? Because I think one interesting question was that UK can cumulate with EU, but EU cannot cumulate with UK. So it's I didn't have a clear meaning of what will be cumulate. So I think maybe that might be a thing you have to look at. But let me actually allow the committee members to actually make comments and take questions, and then we'll actually then get the ambassador. So McPherson, Carpet, Tring, Mulder, Mwase, Mbuyane, Mantas, Mutaung, Hermans, in that order. Let's actually do that. Okay. Floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Let me welcome you back, Ambassador, to the cheaper shores of South Africa compared to Geneva. And we've always had a good relationship with you, certainly myself, over the last 5 years going to the WTO, so it's nice to see you hopefully more regularly. I think it's important, and you alluded to it, for the Minister to table an executive statement to the House to allow parties to debate and share their views and ideas on a post-Brexit deal. And I do hope that you will encourage him to do so, because we're certainly going to need the buy-in of Parliament to ratify any proposed deal. The last time we spoke with Ms. Mlumbi Peters before in the Fifth Parliament, we were told that one of the stumbling blocks to a SACU UK deal is Mozambique's concerns around a few issues. And I want to know if those concerns are still valid today, because it does concern me that we could potentially miss out on securing, at the very least, the rollover of the EPA if other countries within SACU are going to drag their feet. And let me be very clear that if that is the case, then South Africa must make a determined point that we will then look to negotiate our own post-Brexit deal with the UK. Because there's too much at stake in South Africa to allow other countries to, drag their feet on these issues at our expense. And I do hope that is a sort of a fallback position that the department will keep in mind. And I think that there is more to build on with the UK than the current EPA that we have. I think that there's far more opportunities between those two countries, or between our two countries, than exist in the EPA, specifically on agricultural goods like meat and poultry. And I think that that is something that must be expressed if SACU is going to drag their feet. What I also want to say is that I think South Africa has failed dismally in export promotion, it still does. And that is why we continue to see our share of exports decline. And there are industries that should be looked at where they are doing that well, and we should be looking to repeat that. And I think that the good news about our share of the orange market worldwide is a fascinating story, to see how, 1 in 10 oranges, or 10% of all oranges consumed in the global market, are South African. And that is by and large because of that industry taking, the bull by its horns and driving export promotion. But I just don't see that the department has really taken the lead and really put enough money and plans behind export promotion. And I think that is something that really needs to be ramped up under your new watch. And I think that there's a lot to discuss, quite frankly, with our SADC and SACU partners. They're allowed to trade into South Africa, but they still are continuing to block products going into across their borders. And poultry is certainly one of those, and it's just not a healthy situation where people can send goods into our country duty-free, but we can't reciprocate into them. With AGOA, I just want to say that, from my point of view, that the out-of-cycle review that South Africa was put in was completely of our own making. We really ran down the clock to the 11th hour in the last round of negotiations, and it's no secret that it really irritated our American trading partners. And so, I think that situation that we find ourselves in is of our own doing, and we must accept that. And certainly policy discussions that are taking place in South Africa, which will trigger an automatic exclusion of AGOA, don't help that at all. The discussions around Section 25, should that ever be passed, would be an automatic exclusion of AGOA. And so I think that we also need to start looking to the future and say, well, all these, great ideological discussions that we have very real trade and financial consequences for South Africa. And I think that we have seen that, quite frankly, within the decline of exports to the United States. People, you know, are becoming, you know, wary of doing business in South Africa, and that is just a fact. And so I would like to know what is the, you know, the status of the discussions in the context of AGOA around our continued ability to export autos to the United States, because that is one of the big reasons that automotive manufacturers continue to remain in South Africa, although it's not the only reason, but the access into that market. And then we would also just again reiterate, or I would reiterate, that it's absolutely critically important that this committee is kept up to date at all times with the Brexit negotiations, because it will be members of Parliament that will ratify that deal, and no minister or government should take our support for granted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, the first thing that I would like to raise is with regards to our current account balance. If you see the recent numbers issued, our current account balance has gone into the negatives by a further 60-odd billion US dollars, from 143.5 billion in the negatives to 204.1 in the negatives. What are we doing to minimize that? Because we've had 7 consecutive financial quarters of a current account deficit, and that's of particular concern to us. If you look at the large trade imbalances that we have with countries like China, where there's an 80 billion US dollar deficit, that also makes me think, is that necessarily preferential for us, considering the fact that, yes, they are the largest taker of our goods, but also the largest giver of their goods to our country? And that does concern me. It also, in relation to BRICS, raises some questions around whether or not we are actually benefiting, or we are rather giving ourselves over to a new hegemonic elite. Furthermore, Chair, something that I would like to ask a question around is what metric is used to determine a developing country at the WTO? Because if you look at overall nominal GDP, then China's in the top three at 14 trillion. So is it per capita? What actually classifies them to be a developing country as opposed to a developed country? And then largely just a remark surrounding the digital economy, and you see smokers have the most interesting of discussions, and it's very scary to note how far behind we are. I mean, if you look at Alibaba in China and you look at Amazon in the US alongside other e-commerce merchants, you'll see that our only competitor, if you'd like to put that in inverted commas, is Takealot, and we are not able to compete in that particular space, and that opens up a whole new world of problems for us in terms of managing, you know, trade based on rules and the like, because often these transactions take place instantaneously, and we have no way of measuring the flows of capital in and out of our country. And also, we have a particular challenge in trying to be able to compete with the RCT infrastructure and online infrastructure that they have. Maybe just a suggestion is that we, as a committee, look at discussing the digital economy and where, you know, South Africa can harness its potential, because I do believe that we are going to be left even further behind if we do not take steps towards that. I don't believe that tablets constitute the fourth industrial revolution, and we need to start looking at the Internet of Things and how we then regulate or use that as a potential market entry into other countries. So that's my feedback for this particular session. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think slide 4, looking at South Africa's total exports and the average annual growth since 2013, and SA exports being dominated by minerals. The challenge also with regards to global slowdown, the dependence of South Africa with regards to income from our sale of our minerals and the depreciation of that over the years, there should have been preparation for diversification of the economy.
moving away from our dependence on mineral exports. Just wanted to know, in terms of a plan for diversification of the economy, could you maybe elaborate on what plans are in place? Secondly, with regards to the World Trade Organization, I'm not surprised that there is an imbalance. If one looks, for example, at the United Nations, where your superpowers have veto status, we probably have a similar situation where your superpowers are able to outnumber and outgun your developing nations. But could you give me an example? Just one. That's my thinking. My thinking is that it's the influence that the superpowers actually have. But there's the WTO rules are imbalanced. Could you maybe just give one or two examples of what that imbalance actually is, besides the superpower aspect? Slide 13, the proposed US, EU, and Japan proposed to narrow the scope of policies. Are there any negotiations or plans in place to mitigate the effects of these three blocks to narrow the scope of on policies? Any negotiations, plans to mitigate the effect on narrowing the scope? That's slide 13. The US, EU, and Japan propose to narrow the scope of policies for industrial development, technology transfer, and state-owned enterprises. Slide 16, one of the challenges with regards to Africa integration is the development of cross-border infrastructure linkages. When I was here in 2013, I can recall the former Minister Rob Davies bemoaning the fact that when we have these trade agreements with our African counterparts, one of the challenges that we as South Africa face is poor infrastructure. So in the free trade agreements, the discussions, negotiations that have taken place, China has come in, and we know China will come into Africa, they'll put in their roads, they'll put in their railways, because they want to get their goods out. But the challenge is poor infrastructure. How is the poor infrastructure in our African partner countries being addressed to ensure that we have a smooth flow of trade throughout the continent? The second thing that I can recall former Minister Rob Davies bemoaning was the entering into agreements with some of our African countries, and I can recall he indicated that we had an agreement with a few countries. This is 2013. We had an agreement with a few African countries, and then what would happen is the EU or one of the developed nations will come into those and say to those African countries, if you have this particular trade agreement with South Africa, for example, or Botswana, whatever the case is, we will withdraw our support that we are giving for social development in your countries, and then the African country pulls out of the trade agreement. Now, you spoke about the risk of implementation, and the risk of implementation is that some of the African countries are actually pulling out of these free trade agreements that we actually have. How big is that risk? Because 2013 the risk was there, is it? And it appears as if the risk is actually still there with regards to non-implementation by some of our trading partners, African trading partners. And slide 26, the SADC EU EPA implementation. The safeguard imposed on EU poultry imports. What about imports from other countries like Brazil? I spoke to a chicken farmer not so long ago, and he says that if there are proper safeguards within South Africa, just the poultry industry alone can create some 100,000 jobs. 100,000 jobs. And somehow we don't seem to be speaking to each other. We don't seem to be speaking to our farmers, poultry farmers who are able to create the jobs, and so the poultry imports seem to be also hurting our economy. I quickly did a Google search, and I now know what SPS is. It's the sanitary, phytosanitary system. So, and then finally, I would think, are we preparing for a new exit with regards to AGOA 2025? So we're preparing for a Brexit. Are we preparing for a new exit? And do you not think that what the US is proposing, that is a one African country that will be a model for others, is not a divisive attempt to kind of divide and rule? Rather than negotiating with Africa as a whole, you negotiate just with one country. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be surprisingly short. I've only got two questions to the Ambassador. The one speaks to exchange rate. If we look at page 5 and also 32, where it's mentioned that the average annual growth since 2013 has declined by 2%, my question would be, taking into account that in 2013, the period of 5 years that's mentioned there, the value of the rand was approximately 10 rand, just over 10 rand. And the same goes for on page 32 with the trade with the US. The dates mentioned there since 2008, I think. Yeah. 2008 to 18, the value of the rand in 2008 was approximately between 7 rand 73 and 8 rand 28. So my question would be, if it wasn't for the decline of the rand's value, the weakening of the rand, would the decline in trade be worse in rand or dollar value? The second question on exchange rate is, if we take the Namibia dollar as example, which is on a one-to-one basis, kept on a one-to-one basis with the rand because it's in the same monetary cluster as the rand, the weakening of the rand would be to the disadvantage of a country like Namibia as well, which might cause them to leave or to distance themselves from this one-to-one situation. I just want to ask that. And then my second question is indeed a political question. On page 20, phase 2 negotiations, draft protocols for intellectual property rights. I've got a concern on which, and I see it's not recognized in this document, the appropriation without compensation, Article 25 would have on intellectual property rights, because this will have a direct impact on the situation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's welcome the presentation from the Ambassador. Chair, I think the Ambassador will agree with me that trade relations are necessary because we have to sell to the world, and what we produce and buy from the world what we consume. I think on that one you'll agree. Then also, in terms of international trade agreements, we know they are multilateral, regional, and also bilateral. Then my question will be, if someone come with unilateral agreement in terms of those agreements, are we still negotiating in faith? Then also, Ambassador, you'll agree with me that in terms of the theory of comparative advantage, it tells that a nation should specialize in that for the economic activity where it's less efficient. But then again, the current situation that is prevailing maybe in the Brexit I'm not so sure whether I can call it ethical critique or something, because it leaves other countries as low value-added producers and also infect the industry promotion. That seeks to undermine or trade liberalization, that undermine the greed to adjust and the adjustment to cost of workers. So I'm not so sure, Ambassador, whether you will be able to at least clarify the current situation in Brexit, whether it's the rebelling against the trade, the free trade agreement, or the polarization of the debate. So I think if you can agree with me, that means the populist protectionist is prevailing in that debate. And also, I don't know whether you also agree with me, Ambassador, because there's this narrative of narrowing flexibility that will make outcome more difficult in terms of the process. While I'm saying that there are these non-trade, the Brattings Wood, I don't know, maybe you know, the Brattings Wood that was established in 1944. In terms of the current negotiation, are those Brattings Wood in place? Because really, if you can see the development of those rules, it tells you that the IMF, the World Bank, and the ITO, they are not intervening in those agreements that have been defined by the unilateral that comes here to tell us of national security. Or is there any possibility that you go back to the WTO and put the rule of national security, because it's not there, and they're taking advantage of the WTO agreement. Maybe I'll pause there for now, but I'll come back. Thank you, Ambassador.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ambassador, one of the challenge or hindrance to economic integration of Africa is the economic partnership that African countries individually or as a region enter with the country or regional bloc from other continents. Then, Ambassador, how has EPA affected the agenda of the economic integration of Africa? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Ambassador and the rest of our visitors. Chair, from where we seated, we are very much worried with the arrangement that the West would come and want to divide African states by having a unilateral arrangement. And from where we're sitting, we would discourage the department from doing this. I have a few questions, Chairperson, to the Ambassador. The SADC EU was negotiated and agreed on with the UK as one of the members of the EU. If the UK leaves the EU, how does this change the SADC EU IPA arrangement, since there will be one less country in the EU? Secondly, is SADC negotiating with the EU to change the agreement? Should the EU leave to ensure that it is in line number of member countries in the EU? If the continental free, in the continental free trade area, South Africa is one of the larger countries. In negotiations, how do we make sure that the focus is not only on the least developed countries, but also to ensure that South Africa benefits fully? Given the current situation in our country, how does the Continental Free Trade Agreement deal with the movement of people Chairperson, I understand, I know, as I sit here, that it is the intention of the ANC government that we open our economic lines with African states. It is a resolution since 2012, and we would beg you if you forcefully ensure that it happens. We've been victims of global markets. Yes, we want to trade with them, but we must protect our own terrain first, and then consider them. As I sit here, Chair, I was smiling when Honourable McPherson was speaking. In one issue of the business day, he was threatening. I take it that members of parliament should be patriotic. In one issue of the business day, he said he will campaign for Southern Africa to be stopped, or he will report South Africa to America if the president signs the copyright amendment bill. And I'm now today worried, as I sit with him, what assistance for exactly? On the other hand, he wants sanctions on Southern Africa. He will report us to another country instead of us working together. If we all patriotic, can we all speak with one voice for the benefit of our country?
I was only used by shop steward boys. Can the ambassador explain to us, Honourable McPherson said that we have failed in export promotion. Can you, and he's actually quoted the orange industry as a very, very successful. So can you give us what is the department's promotion plans to maximize our export? Because surely if we have failed, there must have been a plan and there must have been challenges. And then also just to explain to us the effect of non-tariff measures on our trade, import and export.
Thanks, Chair. I would like to welcome the presentation by the Ambassador. I have only one question. Ambassador, what is the position of South Africa on the suggestion that some of the developing countries should be granted? Thank you, Chair.
We will actually then allow the Ambassador. I'm sure it's a mouthful, Ambassador. So if we can actually allow you to take some comments in the discussion, I won't say in responses because it's actually a discussion we have here now, so that we can actually talk to us to see where we are. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank the honourable members for all their questions. They raised some difficult questions. Complex questions, some of which I think I can answer. Thanking honourable members for their questions, some of which I think I can answer, some of which I probably won't be able to answer fully. But let me say that let me start with a number of members mentioned Brexit, so let me just indicate that there are obviously three steps in the process. There's the negotiating side of it, where we have been working at an official level to try to conclude the negotiations. The concerns about Mozambique, I'm not sure what they are or what they were, but those are not evident anymore. the negotiations are one side of it. Once we've concluded the negotiations, there's a process to get authorization for the minister to sign the agreement. That's an executive action. Once cabinet has a view of the of any final agreement, if it's when it's concluded, if and when it's concluded, then submits it to Parliament, as you know, and Parliament obviously at that point would have to look at it with a view to ratification. So I'm sure the minister, when he makes his presentation to Parliament, would outline that in greater detail. So on the question of Mozambique having specific issues, that is not. If they were issues, they've been resolved. They're no longer holding up our conclusion of the negotiation. The question on export promotion, I suppose I should just make it clear that we have different divisions in the department. We have a division in the department that deals directly with questions to do of promoting South African exports. We have a deputy director general that is in charge of that, and it's probably best placed to answer the questions about how we design our export promotion activities, where the focus countries are, what are the products that we're looking at. What I can say is that I am certain that those are defined on the basis of industrial policy priorities, the basis of our export profiles, what we can export, and then it's pursued in a number of different jurisdictions in different countries around the world. The division that I'm responsible for managing, International Trade and Economic Development Division, is concerned with our negotiations on agreements that provide for preferential treatment. What I'm asking is that the questions about export promotion be directed to the minister and to the DDG responsible for export promotion. There were questions on. The current account balance and our deficit that we're running on that. I haven't looked at the current account balance specifically over the last period. What I know is that when we look at the overall, one would need to look at the trade balance. Need to break it down. The balance of payments has a number of components of which the current account balance is one. So one would need to look at all of those together. What we were presenting here today was on the trade balance in terms of our exports and imports. Current account balance would be a broader measure, would take into account services and a number of other elements, some of which are not responsibility directly falling under us, some of it, and then beyond that, the balance of payments is a broader measure. What I can say is that it's important to note that the BRICS itself is not a preferential trade arrangement. It is a grouping of countries coming together to work on a number of different fronts, trade being one. We have raised the concern with China about what we see as a significant trade imbalance with China. What's interesting in that discussion, and this goes to some of the shortcomings in data, is we've often argued with China that we run a significant trade deficit with China. They respond by saying our trade is balanced. And the reason is how you what you count as trade. So there's a lot of trade that we would see as the destination being Hong Kong that ends up in China. And so from the Chinese side, they see it as an import from South Africa. We record it as South Africa as an export to Hong Kong. So from the Chinese side, when we've had this debate with them, we've gone back and forth a number of times. They're saying, well, we're getting these exports from South Africa, and it is the trade is balanced. We export as much as we import. So we have a debate ongoing, and this happens with Turkey. It's happened with a number of other, with India, with a number of trading partners. It's how we record our trade. We don't always record it in the same way. The product that we're sending to Hong Kong may indeed end up in the mainland, but we've recorded it as an export to Hong Kong, not to China, and that gives us the deficit. So we've had this debate. That's probably less important in some respects than the question of what is it that we're trading. And that's where the issue is, that we export to China mineral products. And so we're very dependent on China's consumption of South Africa's South African commodities. What we struggle to compete to export to China is value-added manufacturing products. And that, so it's not so much the balance that is the issue, it's more the content of our export basket to China, which needs to change. And we've had ongoing discussions with China on how to change to address that that balance. Some of the answer can be that the Chinese, and they've been doing this to their credit, they've been coming to South Africa and looking for products to purchase for China. Some of it has to do with Chinese investment, increasing investment in South Africa in the manufacturing sector, and we've seen some investment from China in that. So this is an ongoing discussion, but the real issue with China is not so much the deficit, because we don't reach a resolution on that, but it's the content of the trade. There was a question about South Africa's position on the proposal to narrow flexibilities for graduation on special and differential treatment. The rule in the WTO in this respect is that a developing country standing is in the way that they say it, it's self-selection. You decide for yourself if you are a developing country or not. The convention obviously is that OECD, members of the OECD, it includes the US, China, EU members, Japan, Australia, all of the OECD members have been self-declared themselves as developed countries. And so that's the convention. South Africa is in an interesting position in this respect, is that during the Uruguay round, we were treated as a developed country, but this was under the previous regime that saw themselves as being part of the developed world. After 1994, we were intent on ensuring that the status, South Africa's status, that in future negotiations we would be treated as a developing country. And the reason being that some of the flexibilities that developing countries received in the Uruguay round were not afforded to South Africa, and may go some way to explaining the difficulties we've had in building our industrial base and to some extent witnessing deindustrialization after 1994. There were questions about how we prepare. I think mentioning the fact that we still continue to be highly dependent, overly dependent on mineral exports, this has been the heart of the department's policy, the Industrial Policy Action Plan since 1995, 96, and the various iterations have been precisely designed to develop and to advance a clear industrial development strategy. Even while South Africa was doing relatively well during the commodity super cycle from 2000 on, what we our analysis was showing in the department was that this was still overly dependent on commodities, and that if the commodity cycle was to come to an end, that some of the real problems of that growth path would be exposed, which in fact have happened. So the only answer I could give to that is that the department was aware for more than a decade that the growth path that we were on during the good years from 2000 to about 2008 and perhaps even a bit longer was not going to be sustainable. And so the department continued to advance the industrial policy action plans and the various iterations to diversify the economy, strengthen the manufacturing base, and so that is a we should look back at some of the earlier articulations of the industrial action plan because it said precisely that. On the question of the rules-based system and the imbalances that were mentioned, I suppose the principal point is that you would prefer to operate in a world where you understood that the rules were clear, and that everyone operated in the same way and understood the rules in that way in international trade. But of course, we know that in making rules, there are stronger and weaker members that participate in those processes, and so what comes out of that can shape the outcomes. If we look at the WTO agreements, the agreements themselves that come out of the Uruguay round are littered with evidence of outcomes that favored stronger partners rather than smaller partners. South Africa participated marginally in those negotiations. Developing countries in general were marginal to those negotiations. They were driven by the big players at the time, and so the outcomes of that shaped their their interests and their capabilities. And you would need to look at the agreement on agriculture, the WTO's agreement on agriculture, which while we talk about opening up trade and liberalizing markets in so many ways in other parts of the agreement, when it comes to agriculture, developed countries were very effective in preserving the policy space to support their agriculture from competition from developing countries. So they provided themselves with sufficient space to protect what is in a globally open market would not be competitive. So you can see it in the way the agricultural agreement is structured. It's most evident there. But it's also evident in industrial policy, on industry, whereby countries that for many years had used programs for local content, for instance, building up domestic capabilities by requiring investors to source domestically through a variety of local content measures and had done it to build up their domestic industries, when it came in the Uruguay round, prohibited it, which meant that developing countries that were still in the catch-up phase that needed these type of policies to build up their capabilities, it would be prohibited. So we've struggled, again, this is another incidents where long-standing measures to build industrial capabilities, tools to build international, to build industrial capabilities was removed. So there is there's evidence of that. Also in the subsidies agreement, you can find those type of provisions. In questions of technology transfer, this is another area where a critical element of development is using technology and the ability to use technology in that. Under the Uruguay Round agreements, it's been much more difficult for developing countries to access the technology that they need for development. So there are many examples of where developing countries have raised concerns with the way the agreement was designed and its implementation. And it's against that that our attempt has been to try to address some of those imbalances. The latest proposal from the EU, US, and Japan to make it even more difficult for developing countries, for governments to support industry, is evident. And those proposals have come forward, but I think we're much better prepared now to interrogate them and see them and perhaps even oppose them if once we see what's on the table. But those have not been, we haven't seen the specific proposal yet. There was a question on the African, a number of questions on African integration, and the question of poor infrastructure being one. Again, this is a much broader agenda issue on the agenda beyond even the Department of Trade and Industry. It cuts across many departments. But what I can say is that under the AU, under the African Union auspices, there is it was initiated under the former NEPAD, but has been absorbed into the African Union. There's a continental-wide program for infrastructure development of various kinds. And there are various programs across the continent trying to link up roads, railway communication networks, and a lot of investment and work has gone into that. In our region, we've been building on work that was done in the 90s and early 2000s on spatial development initiatives, where we're trying to link up, strengthen roads, railways in southern Africa. So the one success has been the road between from Pretoria and Johannesburg to Maputo. That was part of this. There's a north-south corridor which is attempting to strengthen the linkages from Durban all the way up to Tanzania through Zimbabwe, Zambia, and linking it up and continuing north. And a lot of work has gone into upgrading roads, railways, and facilitating border crossings. This doesn't fall directly in the responsibility of the department, but we get reports from time to time on progress in that respect. There was a question. I don't know what Minister Davies would have been talking about pulling out of agreements as such. What we are aware of is that members in the SADC, for example, have introduced measures that inhibit South Africa's exports from time to time. We have a SADC agreement, we have a free trade area. 98% of trade is supposed to move freely through the region. These measures we've seen as an impediment to our access. And a non-tariff barrier could be a new requirement for a customs form. It could be a new standard that is set by the importing country that if you want to import your product, you need to meet a new standard. But it's not quite clear what that standard is. And you can't get the documentation to prove that you've made it. So we've run into a number of these problems within the context of SADC. But at the same time, I think we also need to be very much aware that South Africa is one of the main beneficiaries of these agreements. We have the most diversified economy. We mentioned that we are. That Africa is an export for our exports. It's an important market, and it's becoming more and more important. We will stand to gain we've gained from the SADC agreement, despite these problems that arise from time to time. So I think we need to look at it in a balanced way. The problem has to. I mean, I think we have to understand that if the benefits are not seen to be shared equitably, then you start to run into these problems. So where these issues arise, we engage with, for instance, Zimbabwe, with Tanzania, with Zambia to try to resolve them. And but I think we shouldn't be mistakenly think that the agreements don't benefit us. Even with these problems, they are still beneficial. There was a number of comments about the proposal from the U.S. for an agreement with one African country and whether or not it's divisive. I think this was a concern by many countries when the proposal was made. The message that was coming out from many of the ministers in the Abidjan meeting is that there's a strong preference that if the U.S. wants to negotiate a new deal in future, that it would do so with the African continent as a whole, and that in fact our priority was to consolidate and operationalize the African continental agenda at this stage. But I suspect that this is not the end of the story. We're going to continue to hear this intent of negotiating one, and there may be one or two. There may be a country that in the end decides to go in that way, but the position that was beginning to come out in Abidjan was that is not our preference. The question of the exchange rates, I'm not sure I can answer that properly. The reason for doing it, for making those points in dollars, for setting out the data that we had or the statistics we had in dollars, is that it gives you a better sense of remove some of the volatility of the rand going up and down. In dollar terms, we get a much better sense of where we are vis-a-vis the rest of the world, and that gives you the sense of the reduction. If the rand dropped in rand terms, it may look better. But in dollar terms, it would be worse. So I think we'd need to take that into account. So the idea of putting it into dollar terms was to get a sense of where we are in a more constant manner. There were questions about the comparative advantage, but I thought that the answer was. The question came with an answer as well about the importance of industrial policy, that comparative advantages are not simply given, they can be made. And you can make your advantages through industrial policy, through beneficiation, through trying to add value, and all now developed countries have used that over time, and this is the importance of the centrality in the department of industrial policy, and that we continue to pursue that. On the question of the Brexit on South Africa, again, as I said, I mentioned it earlier, but really the idea in our agreement in the negotiations with the UK was simply to continue what we had with the UK while they were part of the EU, if they leave. So it's to make the same type of arrangement with them on a bilateral basis. And the minister will, as I said, will give more information on this very, very soon. On the question of the narrowing flexibility and the and the question of the Bretton Woods, I think there's a difference between the other Bretton Woods institutions and such as the IMF and World Bank. The WTO is the one organization where decisions in principle are made by consensus. This is why it's different to the others. But if developing countries can stand together on these, they can block um, they can block outcomes. And the fact that there were a number of proposals, such as on data, on digital trade, on investment facilitation, in other areas, that there was an attempt to push these issues onto the WTO agenda at the ministerial meeting in 2015, developing countries stood together to refuse. And we were effective in doing it. We said that we're not ready to negotiate rules at this stage. Now, that's in principle, you have this power. In reality, of course, power operates in many, many different ways. And alliances are broken. Countries that took a position like this one day, tomorrow take a position like that. It does change over time. And big players obviously do have a lot of instruments that they can use to shape debates. The question of national security, I should just try to clarify. There is a provision in the WTO, in the agreements, that allows you to use national security measures. But those are usually meant, the intention was for defense-related and security-related issues, which are not necessarily trade. But it's not it's not been used before. So the measure that was taken, what was new about it, it was the first time that this was invoked as a reason to raise the tariffs beyond the bound rates. And then there's a debate in the WTO on whether or not, and the way the debate goes is whether or not by using national security, can the WTO's dispute settlement review that, or is it only the country that invokes it has the right to do it and no one can question it? So there's another debate that comes out of this. So whether or not it's self-judging or whether or not it can be subject to dispute settlement procedures itself. There was a question about the impact of the Economic Partnership Agreement on African integration. I think it's a very profound question in the sense that I think before we even moved towards the concluding or even starting the AFCFTA, the continental negotiations, the European Union has negotiated economic partnerships with some parts of the region already. So in a sense, that those economic partnerships agreements have helped to fragment the region, the African region. I think there are a couple of things that we've tried to do to mitigate that fragmentation. One of which was through the not easy to explain. But it's through the rules of origin and accumulation. What we were trying to get with the European Union towards the end of the negotiations was an ability or was the possibility that we could use inputs from other African countries in our production processes for export to Europe and vice versa, that other African countries could use South African products for export to the EU as a way to try to mitigate the fragmentation that we saw coming out of that. We have those arrangements in principle. We've not worked it through in detail, and so it's something that needs to be followed up. But I think probably the more important message, and particularly for the committee to consider, is whether or not there should be a review of the economic partnership agreements now that the AFCFTA is in place. We're saying with the U.S., for instance, this idea with the U.S. that we negotiate as Africa, with the U.S., perhaps that same principle could be applied to our relations with the European Union. There are some I've heard in Europe that are open to looking at that, so it's something to look at. South Africa's position on special and differential treatment on preserving it, I think I mentioned that we have taken a view with many, many other developing countries in the WTO that that is a principle, it is part of the agreements, and that it needs to be preserved. And we've also taken a position that South Africa would want to use the flexibility of special and differential treatment if we need it in the course of negotiations. So there was a question on our position on that. There was a question about the movement of people. There is in Africa, there is a protocol at the AU level. South Africa has not signed onto that protocol. And of course, one needs to make sure that if you're going to sign on to something like that, you have the capacity to manage movement of people effectively. And so there are many questions that raises, but there is no, South Africa has not signed on to that protocol. Also, that is not part of our brief. It is the Department of Home Affairs that deals with those issues, but it does come up in the context of trade discussions. And maybe I'll just end with the last point on the benefits of the AfCFTA for South Africa. I think it's very clear that South Africa stands to benefit from the AfCFTA. We are one of the most diversified, developed economies in Africa. We're already exporting a lot into Africa. We would expand that into West Africa and other parts if there's an AfCFTA. But I do think that we need to be very much aware that for an agreement to be sustained in the long term, benefits have to be shared equitably, at least must be seen to be shared equitably. I think, Chair, I'm not sure I've answered all the questions. And if I haven't and I can't, then I will... Now, there was one question I did miss about expropriation without compensation. It would not necessarily fall under the intellectual property rights protocols, probably fall under the question of investment protocol, but that is an issue that will come up in future. And of course we would have to take into account what the national legislation in South Africa states, what our constitution states, and any changes that are made there would have to be taken into account. That process would only start, I imagine, next year, as far as it being taken up in the AU. I'll stop there. I hope I've answered most of the questions, Chairman.
So I think obviously this will be ongoing discussion, but I'm sure there will be a point that, as you have said, the questions you couldn't answer where you highlighted that the minister may have to come and update us at some point. So I think let's maybe conclude on the matter, because I'm just looking at the time. I see that you want to actually, you said you'll come back, but you didn't leave the room, so you're still here. I'm not sure if you still want to say something. Because when you say I'm coming back, I thought you'll leave and then come back. But I see you raising your hand. So I'll take your comment and then we'll try and actually conclude, obviously, because, you know, the point I'm trying to look at is that how do we practically look at the situation we're in, with the challenges we have, which on my part I see as socio-economic. What is the role of South Africa, and with all the other national groups we have in the country, how do we make sure that we account for everybody and we create an economy that grows and develops in the context of the continent? I'm just saying it's a thing we can't ignore. Competition on skills and other related things. We need to actually find a way. There are skills we'll need as a country, but we'll need to develop our own skills to compete in this space. So those are things which are quite important. It should be so relevant to current developments in our country if we are in the trade and industry space and we are looking at the issues as we should. Mbuyane, I'll take your comments as trying to help us round up.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think you said earlier on that there's no wrong answer, there's no correct answer. We're engaged. somewhere, somehow we'll find each other somewhere. Chair, mine maybe is not even a follow-up, just I wanted to check in terms of the rules of unfair trade, the question of dumping, and the question where selling a product that is in export with that country, and also the countervailing duties. As South African, because seeing that we've got a lot of countervailing and also dumping, does that not hurt the economy in the process and also closing the gap of trade between South Africans? And also maybe the question of protecting and blocking the market, how does that relate with the unfair trade? Chair, maybe the other one will be the America First, but we will talk in that given space, maybe outside of here, because really it's interesting to block and come with unilateral while you have an agreement that is binding. So outside you're coming with it's unfair, but it's fine, we'll talk in another space. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Given the statement made by the Ambassador about the possible review of the economic trade agreements, I'm not sure how these things are normally processed, but can we ask if it's possible for a proposal to come to this committee on possible reviews that would benefit the South African economy and trade relations?
The DDG is our partner, so if we invite him, I'm sure he can consider that space. So I think let's try and round up members. I think we're in agreement. I know that we won't actually finish, but to the ambassador, just to say, there's lots of issues we'd like to raise, but on this one we just want to get sense and have a scope and picture of where things are at and be able to actually share with you in that space. So we'll actually ask that you try and sort of round up. We know there are lots of issues that we may have to follow through. There was actually an interesting issue. I actually was looking at the CBS. On the abbreviation it says CETRA's Black Spot. The highest exports in our country is oranges or citrus fruit, but the point that already when you talk CBS, it's like there's already something wrong with what we actually have in abundance as export to other countries where something has been picked up so that we actually can actually be disadvantaged. I'm just saying, we look at it, why would you look for black spots as a big issue and almost have a big agreement to be able to look at that? So I think it's double-edged sword, because on my side, I think as well, if we actually export good quality products, then we are competitive in the globe. So I think it's an important point, but to be elevated at this point where you can be able to talk about CBS, it's very interesting. Maybe you can want to comment on that, Ambassador. I'll ask you to actually just round up and close. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you very much. And again, thanks for the really very good questions. On the point of anti-dumping, unfair trade, those are dealt with by, as you've indicated, by anti-dumping measures, countervailing measures, but also safeguards. There's a WTO agreement that says how you have to deal with these. And in South Africa, we have the legislation in place and it is implemented and followed by the International Trade Administration Commission, the ITAC. So ITAC does that work. So if there is a product that comes into South Africa that is below the fair price or the established price, a firm or our industry can approach ITAC to talk about a duty to offset the disadvantage that it's providing, it's incurring on South African producers. That would be at the firm level. If there's a subsidy that a government is providing to firms to export, then the route is you use the countervailing measure. So if it's a government support for an industry and it's unfair in South Africa, there's a way of dealing with it. If it's the firms undercutting price in order to get markets and it's below a fair price, there's a way of dealing with that. There's also the safeguard measure, where the increase in imports is significant enough to disturb the and cause injury to the local local industry, and then you could, there's another way of doing it. There was a question that came up earlier, which I didn't answer. why do we have these safeguards just against the EU and not Brazil? In that case, it was because we have a preferential arrangement with Brazil. With the EU, and it is under that preferential arrangement that the imports were coming in at very steep increases in imports from EU producers, because the tariff for EU is zero under the agreement. So it's under the EU agreement that we have the safeguard to protect the domestic industry against that. With Brazil, we have the normal tariff that we have to the rest of the world, and that tariff is higher. The reason Brazil's imports are beginning to increase now is because the EU imports are being constrained, so Brazil is coming in. So it's a very complex. Other major imports from the come from the US. So these are major poultry exporters, and obviously, the industry is looking for the support that it can get. I should make the distinction between the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, and the EU that we have, the relations that we have with the U.S. compared to the others. With the U.S., this is a U.S. program, so we didn't negotiate this with the U.S. This is in terms of their legislation that they provide. This preferential access to the U.S. market under AGOA, under the GSP. So it's entirely up to them whether or not they want to keep it, they want to let it go, or they want to attach conditions to it. It's national legislation of the U.S., unlike the Economic Partnership Agreement or the other agreements that we mentioned, which we negotiated and are binding on both sides. So maybe that's important clarification to make. The trade remedies and matters like SPS, under which the citrus black spot would be one type of measure, come under the SPS measure, would be called together considered non-tariff measures. So these are all measures that impose that block trade. Sometimes you think it's the CBS, we would argue, is a protectionist measure, that the black spot is not a serious concern. Certainly the science around it doesn't show that it is serious, but from the EU side, they use that SBS measure for what they say are environmental and health reasons, and therefore block the can block South African oranges on that basis. Some of the measures, non-tariff measures, are legitimate. They are correct. You need to have regulations to protect the environment, for health, for safety. But they're very quick. It's very easy to move. There are instances when those measures are not used for those reasons only, but also to protect domestic markets, so they have a protectionist impact as well. And then maybe the last point on the question of the proposal of the EPA, I think the main only point I was trying to make is in response to the question of the fragmentation. And we argued for many years, I mean, even while we were negotiating the EPA, is that by negotiating separate deals with sub-regions in Africa, this would be, the impact would be to fragment. Now that we have the AFCFTA in place, perhaps it's time to look at that again.
I think my vocabulary did improve today. I did have bilateral, I tried to understand what it means, multilateral, but you used another one, plurilateral, which was a bit of a challenge. What with your closing remark, it looks like there is actually the subdivision part, which relates to some kind of trade. So which I'm told, what I understand from you, Ambassador, is that it's not a good agreement to actually have that plurilateral. Stay bilateral and multilateral, I think, still good. I think you agree with me on that. Okay. Thank you very much, Ambassador. I think members of the committee, because I think for Ambassador, when we took a break, I could actually pick up that he went out, came back. He said, this place is better than Geneva. And then I said, okay, why, Ambassador? He says, in Geneva, if you smoke, they put you in a very cold corner there, and it's very difficult because it's so cold you can't smoke properly. So I think I did actually pick up, Ambassador, that we're more, better people in the space of accommodating those who have small things to do at the corner. So when I say it's tea time, and I know, well, okay, it's not in the cold corner, somewhere outside. Yeah. So can we actually then conclude and thank the Ambassador for the interaction and the presentation? Most appreciated. And maybe can we ask the ANC guys to stay here when we actually disperse? Can we actually then look at the program as the last part of our meeting? It's circulated to members. We actually try and update the program just so that we can see sense of where the program's changes are. When we actually adopted it as a committee, it went to the department and ministry. In the implementation, you do find that there might be programs that are delayed or are ahead. So the changes which you see on the program is what is implementable with the relevant changes that we have here. So I thought let's actually agree that we have the circulated, it's third quarter, but for the calendar year, it's end of this year between now and December. So there are actually slight changes. The one which I want to highlight, it's Friday, 11th October, the training part of industrial policy. We do actually have Professor Black confirming that date, which we really appreciate that all members should be able to accommodate. So can we then conclude, because in terms of our agenda, the committee business will be this program. I think the committee will be able to accept that and then actually agree that we close our meetings at this stage. Kappa?
Thanks, Chair. Just a quick one. Just to confirm what Andre said to me earlier, this is the one that we received yesterday. This is just so that we could see it physically in front of us. Excellent.
Okay, so it's circulated yesterday. That's the one we agree upon. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.